Welcome back to the Nonprofit Renaissance, where we help nonprofit leaders go further and grow faster. I'm one of your co-hosts, Colin, and in this episode, H and Justin are joined by special guests Tim Foote and Brooke Hodnefield of Slingshot Group, who are seasoned experts in nonprofit staffing and organizational growth. In today's episode, we're diving into the topics of talent retention, innovative hiring practices post-pandemic, and how strategic staffing can revolutionize nonprofit operations. I hope that you're ready for an insightful discussion on building resilient teams that drive mission success. Let's go and let's grow.
I would absolutely love to know how Brooke came on and how she connected with you guys.
Yeah, come on, Brooke. That's a story.
Okay. So my journey to Slingshot in a succinct form. So my background is just like a melting pot of all these different things. And my life's journey and moving around and my story is a melting pot. Even my denominational journey, my faith journey, also represents all those things. And so, I had been working at a nonprofit. I was doing strategic partnerships and volunteer management and training and, you know, all the things in nonprofit world that starts with one job and then you end up with like 10. I was doing that. And it was supposed to be part-time and I was definitely not working part-time. Kind of had the crash and burn moment. I had a kindergartner that was supposed to be off the bus to grandma. I'd scheduled grandma on the wrong day. So I had a kindergartner that was riding around the bus like alone. And the school called and they had to take him back to school, which horrible. And I was across town. I know it was really bad. So I get the call that Tyson is sitting back at school and I have to go pick him up. And so I'm like crying on the way there because I'm like, the wheels have fallen off. I've taken on more than I can chew. Transitioned away, took a break, ended up doing some stuff at my church. And there was this great gospel-centered life design. So life planning type stuff, if you're familiar with that, but just like gospel-centered. One of the co-creators happened to have be a friend of Slingshot and said, hey, you know, some of what we do here with life planning with people would be amazing to do as people are transitioning and as someone's considering to make a career jump or just exploring what's next, sector to sector, or just what's next on their journey of life. So we kind of put together this idea, this kind of a workshop of sorts to help people navigate transition using some of these tools and some of the things I'd been trained on. And I honestly had no idea who the Slingshot people were. I'm like, oh, that's a cool name. I like yellow and that's good. And so truthfully built out this thing and I'm like, sure, let's go talk to about this thing to these people. And let's go out to Irvine. It sounds awesome. And so in the 11th hour, it ended up that the person that was going to go with me was not able to go. And they're like, you got this. Just you go talk to the people. You're passionate about this thing and definitely was. So I show up in Irvine and I get to meet the co-founders of Slingshot and our COO, who's currently our COO, and other higher ups at Slingshot. And immediately I felt at peace and just loved the way that these people showed up. They were interactive. They were relational. They cared first about like who I was before even what I was there to do and talk to them about. And my keynote presentation was showing my presenter notes. I could, for the life of me, not figure out in that moment how to take the presenter notes off. And thankfully, like, you know, they rolled with it. They're like, it's all good. This stuff happens. So long story short, the thing that I came to share and our idea wasn't the right thing for the moment, but I could not shake how I felt and the culture that just totally drew me in. And I recognize I have all these weird pieces in my journey of church and nonprofit and for-profit and recruiting and ministry and just a big mix of stuff. And it just all in this moment was like came together that God had equipped and designed me to step into this role and honestly help other people do the same thing with all their weird pieces that they have that sometimes doesn't make sense until someone else can see it. So that's one of the
things. It's a great story, Brooke. One of the things I want to add to that is our favorite piece of the work that we get to do is when the mission of the leader matches and aligns with the mission of the organization. in transitional seasons, even when you don't realize you're in a transitional season. Mm. And the way Brooke embodies our culture and did on that day, and we just knew we needed Brooke on our team. And then how that shows up in our nonprofit division of Slingshot is our unfair advantage, I think, in the staffing and culture and strategy space, coaching space in nonprofit. So we just love all that Brooke and her team brings. I don't even remember you not being able to turn off your presenter notes, Brooke.
Oh, it was real. Yeah. I remember it. I totally remember it.
Yeah. I love that. Were you wearing yellow? Were you on brand from day one?
No, I wasn't. But I still have those pants. I remember the pants I wore. See, they were not yellow. That would have been a little too bold, I think.
Brooke and our team knows I prefer Slingshot green to Slingshot yellow, right?
Yeah, it's true.
There's a divide.
Although I do have yellow over my shoulder there, so.
We'll put a poll out to our listeners. But guys, since I love it that you guys, what you do is, you know, who you are. You've built a remarkable team. And you are remarkable folks. Ever since I've met the founders years and years ago, it feels like a decade plus. How long has Slingshot been
putting like people in their place? 17 years now. 17 years, I think.
17, I mean, so.
Yeah. I'm in my, I've got to do all the numbers, 13th year. But when I came on, we were just a handful of – there was probably five of us, and we were a handful of staffing and coaching engagements. When Brooke joined us, I think we were probably half the size, maybe a little bit more than we are now.
35, 40 people. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Now there's 65 of us around the country, and we get to engage with between 300 and 400 organizations a year. So there is never a dull moment over at Slingshot. Mm. Friends.
I love it.
There's all kinds of variety given that we do so much work across ministry organizations, nonprofit, and church.
But you know, both Justin and I have, you know, seen the fruit of that because we get to work with the same churches that either folks that you've put in place and building those teams, we get to engage with them creatively, you know, on the marketing side, on the video, film, design, all the above. Tell us this, and then Justin's going to jump in here because we're going to put you guys on the hot seat today because a lot of great content out there. You guys have shared great podcasts, great resources for churches that we've seen. But today we're going to kind of flip the script on you guys a little bit just for fun, just to kind of little it's we're taping this in the year of election year.
Go.
So let's go. Yeah. I love how they're getting sweaty. But tell us just to start, to kick things off. You have access. You're looking at the churches post pandemic with all the data you have. What have you seen? What has changed in hiring and staffing in the past couple of years, and specifically the last 3 years, if you may, which feels like a decade? Any thoughts there, Brooke, Tim?
Yeah. I mean, I'll speak to the nonprofit world, which is the world that I live and breathe on the daily. I would say the first one is just talents on the move. There is such a churn that's going on everywhere across every space in every organization. It feels that is true. Even more so if you double click on that, I think the churn is real in the development arena. If you're a fundraiser, if you are trying to hire a fundraiser, you are experiencing this. And the longevity and tenure of a fundraising professional has decreased over time, even from 18 months to 16 months being the average in the last year. So it's going in the opposite direction, which is really wreaking havoc, I think, on nonprofit organizations because they can't keep development professionals, and development professionals have a lot of options right now. So that's one of the first things that comes to mind for me.
I would add that it's a candidate's market now. It used to be pre-pandemic that you'd get a ton of applications and you'd be able to pick and choose. But now with all the kind of remote work opportunities and contract work opportunities that have grown out of the pandemic, I think people have just become more innovative in how they staff. We really need to tell a compelling story, and it's usually necessary for a third party to tell that for an organization as to why a person would want to be a part of the mission and vision and story of a given nonprofit or ministry organization. So I'd say that's a big thing that's changed. It's a candidate's market. And as much as you think you're interviewing for your new leader or group of candidates are absolutely interviewing you.
Mm. That's good. What is the slingshot process? Is there something you guys have coined, patented, figured out? The secret, this is it, the secret sauce, the silver lining. What's the process in matching, and specifically, Brooke, with the nonprofit and the growth in that kind of wing for Slingshot in the last couple of years and decade, what's been that process for you in placing and positioning, putting people in their place?
Yeah. I think the thing that we do so well that makes us different is relationships at the epicenter of everything we do. And it's a ripple effect because you can post and place things as many places as you want to and expect people to come, but they're not coming. So everything is built on relationship, and it's a long game. It is a patience and persistence game that we are about. And honestly, too, just allowing for God's movement in that and timing to be that way and being patient with the candidates we interact with, as well as the organizations we do. And also just to be able to speak truth in kind ways to see, we want to leave both individuals and organizations better than we found them. And so whatever our intersection, our paths cross with a leader or with an organization, that is our hope and our desire. We're not cookie cutter. So every time we work with someone, we're doing it in a unique and special way based upon what we know that that person or that organization needs, that we know is going to be different from one to the next. And I think we take the time to be curious and learn and ask those questions so that we can care for each person, each organization, each situation, in a way that stewards them where they are, but still brings growth and brings them in a direction of forward movement.
Mm. We don't want to just spitball a ceiling or throw darts at a dartboard with candidates. We're all about, you take the slingshot analogy, we're all about the right stones in the slingshot when we actually take that shot. And so we truly get to know the organization. I think that really sets Slingshot apart. Organizations we work with feel like we're a part of their staff because in a sense, we're adjunct staff for the duration of the search. We will not do a search without getting on site and really getting to know an organization. We believe prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. And so we're not going to just try and do a transactional approach. It's going to be relational, and we are going to get to know every organization so that when we actually present candidates, it's candidates that we really believe can be the right match. We've got a great proprietary match tool that we continue to develop and hone. We've got a roadmap for the whole process. We've got a proprietary way that we present candidates when it comes time to present. So there's a unique slingshot touch every step of the way.
Now, Tim, I've got the money. I've got the resources. I need it next week. Send me somebody. Come on, throw your stones this way. Come on, dude. I can't wait.
You guys have like a VIP like list that's like, if I'm willing to pay more, you got those like, you're just holding them off. They're all star. They're just rock stars.
Yes. How do you handle that?
One thing you're going to learn about Slingshot is we tell the truth. Yes. And the truth is you're not going to have your leader next week. And
or you're going to have a crummy one.
Exactly. And we're also going to tell you that the people business is a messy business. Staffing is hard work, and it's going to get messy, which is why we invest so much in relationships at the start of the process. And we believe you want to partner with Slingshot because when it does get messy, we're going to lean in the right, healthy kind of way. And also, we're going to determine at the beginning whether you're actually ready for search. And often an organization that says, we want somebody next week, just throw us somebody. Often those organizations aren't actually ready for the search.
Yeah.
That's a dead giveaway, isn't it, Brooke? That's a little warning sign that the organization mightn't actually be ready for a staff search. And we're not afraid to say so and then talk about how we can get ready. Would you add something to that, Brooke?
Yeah. I mean, what I would say too, is that it's equal parts art and science. Like we have to know what we're doing, of course, and we have to have the infrastructure to support it. But when an organization wants to jump and go in with just send me names, give me people, we don't care about the site visit, then what that tells us is the candidate's probably not going to be well cared for and step into an environment of potentially chaos and lack of clarity. And they are just looking for a hole to fill. And that's not the business that we want to be about. Because in good faith, we're working with candidates that are entrusting us to help them steward their journey and their transition and their life and their family. So we consider it an honor and a privilege to do that with both the organizations we serve and the candidates we serve. So relationships critical, getting on site's critical, because it's in the same way you can't speak to something in a secondhand way. We want to be able to translate culture and their values and what it felt like to be up amongst the leadership team that a person would actually sit amongst versus just kind of in a robotic, secondhand, vague way that's not actually going to give someone a compelling understanding of an opportunity.
I love that idea that you guys go on site, because that's an expense. That's a, it takes time. It takes person, like your, you know, personnel to be there, not just the time to travel and the expense to do it. What is one of the worst experiences you had when you got on site? Like, don't, please don't say the name. I don't want you to throw anybody under the bus, but like, what is an organization you got on site with, Brooke, and you were just like, you are not ready to hire anybody.
Oh man. Okay. Oh, there's so many interesting ones. Okay.
we have time.
Okay. So I'm going to, on behalf of my team, I'm going to tell two that is really intriguing. One required a dust buster, and it was already there in the room of this place where they offered this team member to stay, because they had a ladybug infestation. So she had to go around and just like zap up the ladybugs the whole time that she was on site. Another one was requiring that shoes come off as soon as you enter their office space, because they were really stewarding what they had created really well. And that was really important to them. And so we loved on that organization and sent them slippers afterwards, because how cool, you come, you got to have your slippers. I got to go to Honduras for an organization that we're currently working with and have been working with for a while, because they were hiring their director of international operations, now COO, and they felt like this person needs to know what it's like to be on site in Honduras with the team. They're required to speak Spanish. Like, stateside's going to do nothing as a site visit. So that was a pretty cool one, going on site. The worst one, and then I'll let Tim jump in. Probably, I would say not the worst one, but just the most gut-wrenching one, was really getting to see an organization's founders that were holding so tightly to their mission that they couldn't see that at the other side of their board, at that table, was basically a pathway of either letting go and finding a leader to take over the helm, or the implosion of a nonprofit. And ultimately, that's what ended up happening. And we got to the point where we did our best to help them work through some of those things. But at the end of the day, that organization was laid to rest. And it was really sad, honestly.
I find it interesting, Brooke, that those the first three examples you gave, actually those relationships and searches turned out well. I mean, they were unique situations. They were memorable rather than like disastrous.
Yeah,
right.
The disastrous ones are where there is a lack of intentionality. There's lack of planning. They don't allow us to speak to the people that we really need to speak to. Or when we work out that what we suspected was high-level dysfunction, and we're willing to step into high-level dysfunction any day of the week. We'll run into a burning building for the sake of ministry and mission any day of the week. When it's toxic, that's when it's sadly disappointing, because it affects the team, it affects kingdom impact. And toxicity can often track back to the head of an organization, and where we know that in most cases, the head of an organization is untouchable. And I think part of that, Brooke, is, you know, where we're seeing founders who are transitioning out, and succession needs to happen. That's why we love to do succession coaching, because then we can really affect the trajectory of an organization.
What's two or three like toxic traits that if you walk in and you start working with an organization, you maybe even show up on site and you notice those things, it's a big red flag. If not like a deal breaker for you to work with them, at least something for you to address. Are there a couple of things that you guys kind of train your team to look for or be on watch?
I mean, I would say what's really unfortunate is you don't even have to train your team for this, because that's why it's palpable. I mean, you can feel it, you can see it, you really don't have to look hard for it because it's been normalized or it's been squelched and hidden. The other thing I would say is, you know, we have individual conversations with team members that are going to be supporting and around the role that we're finding and identifying. And often when you come back and you feel like it was less of a site visit and more of a like counseling and therapy and pastoring that you're doing, you know, there's some heavy stuff that's left undealt with, and that's really weighty, for us, because we want to, just navigate that really well. And it can be really delicate, but that I would say is a surefire sign of toxicity. Those kinds of heavy and hard conversations that are just surface, 'cause they're like anyone cares to hear about what's actually happening here.
Yeah.
Yeah. We hire great team members who are all coaches. And I think that's part of what sets Slingshot apart too, is all of our search associates are coaches. And so they can spot it really quickly. And if it's on Brooke's team, she'll get a call same day. And if it's high level toxicity, I'll get a call from Brooke same day.
True.
And we'll be processing how we need to handle this and how we need to love an organization well through it. Often it's vision void. Often it's lack of communication internally. It's breakdown of relational equity on the team. It's, you know, infighting, the meetings outside of the meetings, anxiety is not getting addressed. All of those things that you would guess are signposts that point us to toxic culture.
Sure.
This podcast is powered by Verse Creative. Verse is an award-winning full-service creative agency and production studio trusted by global brands and organizations. Verse specializes in nonprofit organizations who are serious about their mission and maximizing their resources. Find out how Verse can serve your organization today at versecreative.com.
Those sound too familiar for some of us. And I love that you guys are able to address it, be honest, you know, tackle that head on before adding to the mess and the toxicity, putting new staff in there. That's super cool. You know, I was thinking a lot about the conversation with you guys and the opportunity to chat. And I was thinking about the transitional experiences that nonprofits are having, who are like, for the longest time, they only staffed from within. You know who I'm talking about. Those organizations are like, you got to be a volunteer here, because if you're bought in as a volunteer, or you've been participating or donating or serving inside of this organization, that's where we get our people from. And they never look outside of the organization for expertise that would bring the elevate the organization to a different level, because they for one reason or other, typically the leaders believe that is the purest way to maintain our mission and to be true to who we are. If we let outsiders in, we might lose our DNA. We might not be as pure and authentically who we are. How do you break through that idea of like, man, it's got to be this traditional path that we've grown our healthy organization for 25 or 35 years this way. And now here we are post-pandemic, and it's not in their best interest. They don't have that good of a market to choose from. And the people that they're looking at, they're going, I don't know if anybody's really qualified to help us grow.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're actually, we've had the privilege of working with organizations that think exclusively external and also that think exclusively internal. And so what you're describing is something very familiar for us. I would say the first thing we would ask is like, is it working? Do you have what you need with the talent within your room and within your structure right now? And if not, have you considered exploring outside of the inner circle? Because it could be that there's a perspective that's missing or someone that you don't have at the table because you've only considered kind of your own blood. And there can definitely be pros to that and value in that. But at the same time, there's also things that could be completely overlooked and missing that could elevate an organization to a next level. So we would definitely challenge that and just invite them to consider a different pathway. And I think oftentimes what we are doing is translating value and helping people see talent and value where they haven't considered or thought about looking at it, because it looks different now and they're coming from different sectors. And what previously classically trained is what you're looking for, you might be looking for something you don't know you're looking for. But if no one pushes back and no one asks the question, then you don't know to consider that either.
Mm. An important question at the start of the hiring process is the same question at the start of any kind of strategic movement process forward in an organization, and that is, who are we? Because identity determines function, identity determines the growth of your team. It's asking the right questions, because the quality of your questions determine the power of your mission. And so when you ask who you are, then you realize how well you know yourselves. Then you start asking culture questions. And when you start asking culture questions, you start realizing either we need to perpetuate the good stuff that's happening here, or we need to grow our culture in a better, healthier direction. And the answer to those two questions are whether you continue to promote internally or hire within your network, or whether you hire on the outside. And so many organizations need to expand their culture and grow it, and therefore they need to look outside of the pools they're used to fishing in. And so often our teams can become an echo chamber. It's people that all think the same way that we do, and that's no way to grow. And so we can, just piggybacking on what Brooke was saying, we can come in and ask those expanding questions that cause you to go, oh yeah, we need somebody from the outside. Or sometimes we'll go into an organization and say, this, you're in a really healthy spot right now, and I'm not sure you've seen, but that person, you're going to lose them if you don't give them a growth opportunity. And so let us help you know how to help them step up into a role that's going to be catalytic for the future of this organization, but also for their leadership, and will help them stay on board.
That's where the coaching really is necessary, right?
Mm-hmm. Let me add, for our listeners, it's 30% nonprofit business leaders, 30% churches, 30%, you know, Christian faith-based, you know, businesses that may have never engaged with a search, you know, group or hired from the outside. To them, it's a risk. To them, it's looking...
It's expensive.
It's expensive. It's not comfortable. What would you tell them, and sharing a little bit of what you just shared? And how do you measure success? How do I know? How do you guarantee? It's like, Tim, Brooke, I just want to know if I'm going to put myself out there and put my baby out here, if I may, and we've got a good thing going. What's success? How do you measure that? How do you track that? And how would you guarantee to somebody looking or maybe listening right now who's like considering it, but just not sure, not yet?
I'll jump in on the, why would you consider using a search organization like us? I think one of the first things that we find, often working with boards and whoever it is that's stewarding this search process, oftentimes they don't have the time. Their time is better spent moving the mission forward, leading an organization, leading a board, and they simply don't have the time to do it. Secondly, is that they may not have access to the right kind of leaders, or even know where to start, to your question earlier, inside, outside, one or the other, maybe a combination of both. They don't have the expertise, or they're too close to it to be able to really have an unbiased viewpoint of how best you might move forward. And so having a different set of eyes that can kind of come from a global perspective and also have just a pulse on what's happening in the talent market and how do you become competitive? How are you making this the most compelling opportunity possible? And walking alongside an organization and ask those really important questions to get them thinking more so about the quality of the leader and the quality of the role versus just filling the role with a person. All the ancillary important things that really are what are going to make a leader stay and retain that person. So they can do it on their own and maybe not ask those questions, but it could be that in 6 months or however many long, it's not done in a way that the person's going to stick around and stay. And ultimately you're back at square one. You've lost your time. You've lost your mission momentum. And you don't have a guide or a trusted partner to help you navigate that road ahead. So that's a common conversation we have, for sure.
Hiring is harder than it's ever been. Pre-pandemic world, with social media, it is just harder than it's ever been. It's not like just calling up a bunch of friends. And your time, your leadership time and energy is your greatest commodity. And so the hours you spend working search, when it's something that a group like us lives and breathes all the time, the hours you actually expend doing something that you're not used to doing all the time will end up costing you more than whatever you'll ever pay a search group. So that is so, so important to take that into account. How do we measure success? I mean, we started this, 17 years ago in the church space, when it wasn't happening in the church space, because of a stat that we were concerned about, and that is ministry people were staying less than 2 years. And that was really, really concerning. We believe our process sets leaders up for 5 years and beyond. And then to branch out and now be growing so rapidly in the nonprofit world, and to be able to scale what we learned in ministry organizations to faith-focused nonprofits and even some faith-focused for-profits like you guys do, has been so great to see how our relational approach can really affect Move Mission forward. So to see leaders stay at an organization is probably the biggest measure of success. Now, yes, we do have a guarantee. Like if something, a life event happens, or a family doesn't make a move, or the kids struggle, we'll re-engage in under 12 months. And even beyond that, we want each organization we work with to be a raving Slingshot fan. So we're going to do the right thing. But also we look deeper at the science of it. Brooke talked about the art and the science. But the science of it is when we look at a leader and we come back and we stay connected to an organization, which is always our hope, that we'll be a trusted partner when it comes to the people side of the organization. But is that leader bringing immediate chemistry to that organization? Is there a sense of chemistry that's moving mission and vision and the work forward? Is there increased team health with that person being on that team? Is there an increased level of team health? For us, that's what we want to be known as, the healthy team people. And so we're all about finding the right person to help the team be healthy. Is that person providing a high individual contribution? So is their individual contribution strong to the organization? Like, we love it when an organization said, You placed John or Sally, and they are doing an amazing job. It was immediately evident to us, which is why we have our first 90-day coaching resource that we provide with each search as well, so that the new leader on the team can connect well with their supervisor or the board or whatever that reporting relationship is. Is there increased ministry momentum, organizational momentum? Is it moving the organization forward faster? And then is there increased organizational capacity? We want a person to come on board, learn that organization quickly, so there's greater ROI sooner. There's greater organizational capacity sooner. So those are some of the things, that the science side of it, that we'll look at.
Yeah.
Tim, I want to squash this rumor really quick. You talked about the first 90 days and the coaching, and word on the street. Now, I've verified the health, the people you've placed, our friends, our colleagues, our peers for the last 17 years. So I can, rumor, and the word on the street is that there are no job descriptions, or you guys wait till 90 days, 6 months to then write a job description. Tell us more about this. It's a founder mentality, or...
We wouldn't get hired. That's not true at all, Eridus. One of our co-founders, who's a real creative thinker, he said, I wish that you didn't have to create a job description until a leader was in the role for 6 months. His thinking behind that is genius, because we've all heard the saying, get the right person on the bus. And we will say, when we're in the strategic planning process for a search, we will say personalities will drive searches. Meaning we can have the best plan in the world, like Mike Tyson said, right? And we get into a search, we start connecting with personalities that we have chemistry with, and the job description that we thought we were hiring might shift a little. So the thought behind that, which one of our co-founders, Stan, said one time is, hey, if we could get the right person, we'll often say, hey, this might be the person you thought you wanted, but this is the person you want on your team. Sometimes we'll go out and do a search for a specific leader. We'll end up hiring two people, sometimes mm-hmm. even three people. Or even four people, I can think of an organization, right, Brooke? That we started with one and then we ended up hiring four people. It was obviously a bigger organization, but it was because we started seeing people that they wanted on their team and they were creating a role for those people. Now, organizations that think that creatively can say, yes, I want that person on the team and this is the rough role I want them to perform on our team, but that's going to evolve in the first 6 or 12 months. During their time. Also, I would say, Eris, to your point, you know, great leaders will not be doing the same job in 2 to 5 years. Either at your organization or at some other organization.
One more time for the cheap seats, a little louder.
Great leaders will not always be doing the same job in 2 years or 5 years' time. You get to decide whether that's on your team or off your team.
Ooh. Wow.
We'll be right back after this break, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Wow. That'll preach. That'll preach, Tim. And I'm sure you guys see that firsthand, front row, right? Mm-hmm. With all the organizations.
In our own organization.
Ooh. Sure. Wow. Go ahead.
I would say I'll just piggyback on that because I would say that is the most common reason we talk to people that are considering a jump that never would have guessed or expected. Like they love the work they do. They love the mission. They will say, I was going to ride off into the sunset, you know, here at this organization. And it's because they are not seen or heard or invested in or listened to or given an opportunity, to Tim's point, to flourish. And a high capacity leader is not going to just stay put. Like they want to grow. They want to have opportunities to be developed and move upward in an organization to bring more impact. And if you don't take note of those people, it's true. They'll find their way into a place where they can offer up those things and be seen for that.
Brooke, let me ask you about in the nonprofit sector, what's the fundamental difference between, you know, staffing for nonprofit and then staffing for the for-profit sector? If somebody's looking and it's like, well, same difference, right? People are people. Tell us a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because part of my early recruiting days was in healthcare and staffing in healthcare organizations and working with hospitals. And it is interesting because there is a very stark difference, because oftentimes a nonprofit leader or someone that's looking to have a fulfilling, thriving, ministry-filled career, it's often because there's something within them, within their identity, that speaks to the calling or the mission of the organization, and they feel drawn and compelled toward that organization. And it even at the stake of maybe sacrificing some things to take an opportunity or a role, because they feel so fulfilled by the work that they're doing, that their identity, even their personal values, maybe are tied up in the work that they do. So they're willing to invest more, do more in ways that I never saw to the same level or degree in the for-profit sector. And you can be passionate, you can be all in a for-profit world. I'm not saying one is better than the other. It's wherever God's called you, you can do good work. But I feel like there's an interesting, sometimes in an unhealthy way, your identity can be wrapped up in a mission and you forsake things because you care so much and you have a bleeding heart or so invested in the work that you're doing. So that, in my mind, is one of the greatest distinctions I personally have seen, at least.
That's often really good. Often we'll need to translate for boards of nonprofits, and often in the church space too, that are marketplace leaders, which is one of the things I love about the work we get to do, because we work with so many different people doing interesting jobs that sit on boards. But we'll need to contextualize the difference between faith-based search, whether it be for-profit or nonprofit or church, as opposed to secular marketplace search, because usually you'll only encounter exclusive retained search in the faith-based space. In marketplace, you'll encounter lots of contingency search. and which is where you have multiple organizations throwing the darts at the dartboard, you know, in the healthcare industry or the accountancy industry or building. Whereas in faith sector, it requires so much deeper work in a sense because of theological alignment, alignment with the mission, calling, which is that whole spiritual piece that comes with it that we love so much about the work we do. There's so many components to faith-based search or faith-focused search that isn't there in marketplace, which is why you actually partner with one organization to go the journey with you. And what we see when that goes well and when they're open to that partnership is that partnership continues. It becomes a trusted partnership and you end up really journeying with an organization, and there's nothing better, right, Brooke?
Yeah.
I was curious what you guys thought about the transition to people hiring teams like fractionally versus doing a full-time hire through you. So it's like, again, and this is like, don't hold back any punches for our sake of being a fractional team that people can hire for marketing. But what, like, what do you guys see? What are the differences between somebody who should hire, like shouldn't spend the money, you know, oftentimes budget wise, you might be looking at hiring an agency for the same price as bringing on a staff, or at least that's what the salaries look like. You don't think about all the management expenses and everything else that goes training and all that. But how do you guys decipher that? And, you know, what do you see the good, the bad of like those fractional services for teams that are growing, for organizations that are growing, Brooke, as you're looking, you know, obviously, I think if someone's asking you to help find somebody, you're not going to turn that down and be like, no, you should just hire a fractional service.
It's interesting because I think the ways that we can fill a void are numerous now. I mean, there's outsourcing, there's internal, there's fractional, there's full-time, there's taking a role and splitting it into two part-time roles and you get two people, and the creativity and the ways that you can approach that, I think, should be explored because it's never a one size fits all, you know, kind of scenario. So I think it goes back to asking the question, like what Tim was saying earlier, who are we? And what are we trying to accomplish here? What's our goal in this hire? Is it bringing outside perspective and really helping to deepen our culture? Is it we have a skill gap that is completely void and we need an actual really specific skill set? Is it a generalist in a way that we're looking for, you know, someone to lead and oversee a team? So I think it goes back to kind of building blocks where what do you need? And then what are the options that you have budget-wise, even oversight? Like, do you have the right kind of leaders in place that are going to be able to manage a contracted kind of relationship like that? What's the terms? What's the length? Do you need an actual person because there's toxic or health-related issues, and bringing an outsider into the mix is not going to serve that purpose well? I think there's a lot of other questions that need to be asked. Sometimes it's simply budgetary. I mean, we have organizations that are looking for a unicorn with spots that twirls, and they'll want to pay $3 an hour for that individual. And we'll be honest, you know, we understand what the needs are, but you're not going to be able to attract that level of talent. And in good faith, we can't find someone that is going to be willing to, you know, entertain that kind of compensation structure. So we understand the financial limitations are real. Like, we get that. We are sorry and grieve. Our hearts are heavy for that. But you've got to be at a place where you can afford to attract and retain a talent. And to do that, it may look like a fractional because that's simply what your budget allows for a season. And that's okay. There's not a good or bad, I think, in that. It's just exploring all your options.
Where have you seen like a fractional beat work good for people, and where have you seen it work bad? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think are like the bad outcomes with it? And then, but also, what have you seen good?
While Brooke's thinking about that, I would also add that you need to manage that fractional employment really, really well. Otherwise, you're just throwing away money. I mean, in a sense, hiring Slingshot, just like hiring you guys, is a fractional option too. We have organizations that have an HR department that realize when it's appropriate to come to us. And we know what the roles, specific roles are our specialty, and we will be very honest about it. And so likewise, you might have a marketing department in a ministry or organization, and you have somebody there that is actually managing the outsourcing of certain services. So I would say that's where we see it work best, is when there is somebody who knows how to appropriately manage fractional employment and knows when it's appropriate to reach out for that fractional work. But as Brooke said too, it might be a much smaller organization that isn't ready to hire the role yet. And how do you know you're not ready? We'll tell you. And also, you'll have a salary range that limits the kind of candidate that you're able to get. Mm-hmm. And if you have a lower salary range in this environment, can't get the right candidate, it's not going to be a healthy hire. And we'll say to you, what you should do is go to a group like Verse, who are going to help you, and they will help you scale with what they provide. And then you're going to be ready to go for that full-time employee that's going to be a valued member of your team that you can do life with, that can live out the vision and mission.
Yeah, I do love that, Tim, because I've seen that over and over again. When there's not somebody who can manage the outsourced fractional team member well, it's very hard for the fractional person to bring the most amount of value, because they're not getting the right information. If they're not being managed, they're not able to focus on the right priorities, because they're not getting access to the decision makers or the priorities of the organization. Yeah. And when you have somebody good, we see that success always elevates the manager that's on site. And so we say over and over again, when we're talking to a new client, if you have somebody on site who is teachable, is willing to work, and isn't threatened by us being there, it works really, really well for us. And I could totally see that being the case with you guys in any HR department that isn't threatened by your expertise, whether it's doing coaching or staffing.
Yeah. Let me jump in. Going back to your – oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brooke. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, just to say, going back to your question earlier, I think where the kind of roles that I've seen where fractionals worked out well is in the finance and accounting space, where I would say it's there is a function gap. And so someone needs to come in with a very specialized expertise and is given, to your point, all the information they need, and they're set up for success. There's clarity in their role. There's a timeline associated. There's oversight. That's where I see it working really well. Or also, you can think of in the church space, like an intentional interim. If there is someone that's needed to get the organization to a point of health before you can bring in the next leader, that may be, a C-suite level role. It may be someone that's at the helm that is able to step in a way to shepherd or steward whatever healing needs to happen before the next leader comes. I've also seen that work really well, again, with the timeline, very clear goals and specifics as to how that person is going to engage. And that person is set up where those that are advocating for this person to come in, they're going to be received, received. Yeah. And if not, then that's going to be an uphill battle for that person that's coming in to steward that season. But those are just the two scenarios I thought of when you asked that question.
I love the intentional interim. That is not an option that enough people think through, because oftentimes things are such a mess that the predecessor has so much cleanup work to do, and they have to do it so slowly if they're in it for the long haul. But if you're intentionally like an interim, you can just go in and take all the hits. You could be thrown under the bus, because I'm supposed to be here for a year. It's probably going to be a messy year. And then I'm going to clean it up and leave this organization healthy enough for someone long-term to stay here. And it's such a good strategic move. I think more organizations, if they had access to you guys, where they knew they could bring somebody in that was willing to get run over like that, or help clean up the mess. And I'm sure you guys have a lot of other strategies for when that's the right time, when that's the right thing to do. But I've seen that work so many times that I love that.
Yeah, we will absolutely advise if an intentional interim is needed. And we have partners too that we can also recommend to come in and serve that purpose. That's what you'll learn about partnering with Slingshot, which is why it's always worth having a conversation with us. We can tell you the truth. the last thing we want to do is embark on a search journey when it's not the right time.
Tell us this. We're going a little over time, so thank you for your time. We'll wrap it up here. So we're having a good time. I know we're having a good time.
We're having a great time.
Okay, a few more minutes here. Two things. And where has it been with reaching organizations nationwide? Where are the challenges? Where are the gaps? Where are the areas, and geographically speaking, that are difficult? Does the data show somewhere?
I think, Brooke, it would be a good thing to talk here, because there's an obvious answer to your question, Eridus. Like, where cost of living is high, it's difficult. It's really difficult. Also, you know, when there's not mountains or coastline, it can sometimes be a challenge as well, because people are very particular about where they want to be. And likewise, people might want to be near the coastline or near the mountains if their family's living in Iowa. They want to be in Iowa. You know what I mean? And so you need to work out, okay, how can we make provisions for them to visit their family, you know, three times a year, to get really, really creative about salary package. But I think now is a really good time to talk, Brooke, about remote and how that's become such a huge issue in nonprofit world.
My mind first went to what you just said, cost of living, and then I would say a close competitor to geography is how you do work. That is the most asked, the most needed to be clarified in terms of candidate conversations, because people will forgo salary. They will forgo a lot of things if how the organization works fits their lifestyle. And I've been kind of using this verbiage of work-life integration versus balance, because everything is so connected and interwoven anymore, and our lives are so entangled. So to find something that integrates into who you are, what you care about, in a way that allows you to do the work you feel like you're called to do, in a way that also serves all aspects of your life, that is what people are seeking right now. So remote opportunities could be the case. It could be a hybrid situation with a high degree of flexibility. Rigidity is also something that people are turned off by. If you're, you know, an 8 to 5, there's, you know, you can come in at 8:30 and do 8:30 to 4:30. Like, if that is very much people's noses are in the air about that kind of dynamic too, because they want flexibility and they want to be able to ensure that their work serves the other aspects of their life. And it's a competition. It really increases the challenges for people that are trying to attract talent, because oftentimes if you're not in a situation where you can offer flexibility or come up with creative solutions, you're up against a remote seeking talent workforce.
In saying that, we will take on 5 days a week in the office in the Bay Area. I mean, we'll take on those searches. We just realize,
we have all of them.
There's going to be an extra level of complexity and challenge, and we're going to tell you what that's going to be straight up. But we'll also learn from you as we get to know you what the compelling story is about why you want that person in the office 5 days a week in the Bay Area.
If you're a rescue mission and you're doing work at the rescue mission, doesn't make sense for your director of programs to be halfway across the country. Like, there's certain things that it makes sense. And so that's part of it too, is helping us understand why you've chosen this framework for how you do work. And oftentimes it makes a lot of sense. It's just so that we can translate that well and find the right person that's drawn to that kind of work too.
That's really good.
I love it.
Yeah.
No, that answers. The last one was just with the data and access you guys have around the country, hundreds of organizations, ministries, tech. How is the craze of AI? And we've talked about this. It feels like it's buzzworthy, but tech and in the workplace. We talked about remote work. That plays a role. What are you guys seeing? What are trends? What are things to advise our listeners or warn our listeners on?
AI is the buzz. You want to be asking us about how we're using it in the search process, but you also want to ask how personalized our process is, because that's why you're calling us. I mean, there's going to be people that think they can do search now on their own because of AI, And there's so much beyond what that can provide. It's a list of names. Again, we're not about just throwing the darts at the dartboard or spitballing the ceiling. We're about putting the right stones in the slingshot. And that means AI can, I heard somebody describe AI as a great intern. So the intern goes away and does the work, brings the work back, you finesse the work. Yeah. It's going back to what Brooke said about art versus science. There's science, lots of science. Science is attempting to take over the universe right now. We need to balance it with art, and art comes from real thinking, feeling, interacting, relational people.
And I'll just piggyback on, it's been interesting too, just seeing some of the applications, cover letters come through, even a response to share a little bit about what work and faith looks like for you. We can tell the AI response. I mean, like it does not replace the human and the authenticity. We can sniff it out. I mean, and it's becoming increasingly more common where we see that. And so it just won't replace it. I think you can use it and wield its powers for good. And I think if you turn, and you should, if you turn away and put your nose in the air up against it, I think that also is not good, because there are some great assets that you can have and glean from it. But also it doesn't replace everything, and it won't ever, I don't think.
Yeah, people can tell. H, that's why I still allow the typos in my posts. Nobody's questioning if AI does my posts.
Yes, that is a fact.
You always are telling me that I need to, like, fix the typos and stuff, but I think it makes me more human.
All art, no science over here. Yeah.
Whatever makes you feel better, right?
Yes, exactly.
It would feel cooler if I could say it like no aught the way.
I didn't know what you were saying. Aught.
I've been holding off on it the whole time. I'm so sorry.
Guys, seriously, so much gold, so much science and art here today. Thank you for being
art.
Yeah,
art and science.
It sounds so much cooler when you use your natural. No,
guys, seriously, thank you for being great, friends and partners over the years. Yeah. And much success to you guys. It's in the fruit, and we've seen it, and we commend you guys. But thanks for the wisdom you brought to our listeners today. And we'll put all the links on all the sites. You guys are easy to get a hold of. But what's the best way, for a quick conversation to find out if it's like this is the right path or this is what they should consider?
Brooke? Yeah, slingshotgroup.org is our website.
All there.
Yeah, all there. And I would say to find me on LinkedIn and that Brooke Hodnafield. I love to connect with people through LinkedIn. So that would be another place too, as well.
Love it.
Yes. Sweet.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah.
Thanks
for all that you guys are doing for nonprofits.
And you guys too. We love you.
Yes. Same. Seriously.
Appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to the Nonprofit Renaissance. We hope it ignites a renaissance in you and helps you go further and grow faster. Be sure to share, rate, and subscribe. And if you'd like to recommend or be a guest on our show, send us an email at podcast@versecreative.com.